Hello and welcome back to Content Rookie. It's been a while. I also needed a well-deserved break at the end of 2020, and now I'm back and things are pretty much the same. Well, maybe not all the way the same, which is good. But yeah, I thought I'd get started again with recording some new episodes. I have some really exciting guests coming up very soon. But today's episode is about something that I've kind of tried avoiding talking about, and the main reason for that is that it's just such a touchy-feely topic, and I know that some people are going to get a little bit pissed off with me and others are going to be really happy, but in the end I started this podcast because I wanted to show my perspective on things in the writing and content industries. So I think it's really important that we also talk about this. So today we're going to talk about how to get paid as a writer, and I'm going to go a little bit into how I got paid as a freelance writer, how I negotiate my salary as a writer, what I've made throughout the years and why, and hopefully some tips and tricks for you. And I think this episode has probably been my most requested episode. I've been doing a lot of public speaking in the last couple of weeks, and every time the most asked question is, how much do you charge? How much can I charge? How can I charge more? And yeah, I think we should get to it. So that's what we're going to be talking about today. And just by the way, if there are some strange sounds in the background, I have my dog here with me today. She insisted on sitting in the closet with me, and she sometimes does weird, farty, choky sounds. So it's not me. It's little Ziggy that is here with me. But so, how do you get paid as a writer? Or how do you know what you should charge? How do you know if you're underpaid? It's a little bit of a tricky topic, and as I briefly mentioned in my introduction, there really is no easy answer to this. There's no one-size-fits-all answer. But I do think there's a couple of things that you can look at and you can think about to make sure that whatever rate or whatever salary you give someone, that that makes sense for you and is more or less fair. So I'm going to try to break that down for you all today. And the thing I want to start off with is something that I feel that we've kind of forgotten in our society in general, and that's just the simple question of how much do you value yourself? In the end, writer or not, you're selling your time to a client or a company, and time is really valuable. It's the only thing you won't get back. You can always make more money later. And I know it's a tricky thing to think about if you're maybe just getting started or if your money is tight and you need to earn money, but that mindset is really what kind of got me away from clients that didn't pay well. So I started really valuing myself and valuing my own time and saying to myself, hey, yeah, it would be nice to make like 50, 80 bucks now. And I really need that money, but it's really not worth it because it's going to be detrimental to my future as a writer if I constantly do work that is underpaid. And it's my time is just more valuable than that. And as the years went by and I got more experienced, of course, I didn't really have to ask myself that question as often. But in the beginning, it's what kind of kept me sane to really start questioning. Like, sure, it would be great to have like 50 bucks now, but like the work I have to put in for it, it's really not worth the trade-off of time that I would have to invest. And I think that's the most important thing that I want to start this episode off with. And you should never forget about that. So what else can you look at? So first of all, you should definitely look at your time commitment. And with that, something that I definitely did wrong a lot in the beginning when I started off as a writer was I only looked at the time commitment for potentially writing an article or writing some copy or whatever the client requested. And I never took into consideration the time that I would spend talking to the client, getting a brief, potentially reading any material they have, but then also afterwards iterating on a draft, responding to feedback, things like that. In the beginning, when I was still new and naive, I would agree to things like, oh, yes, I can publish this on the blog for you. I can add your keywords, whatever. And I would just, it would constantly add work to my desk that I didn't take into consideration when I was considering my time. And so oftentimes I ended up working for a really, really bad rate if you would break it down by the hour. So really important when you're trying to calculate or estimate how much time you're going to spend on something, take all of this into account, even potential meetings you may have already had with the client to get to know the client. I try to calculate those in at least with a small percentage because, you know, especially if you're a freelancer, this is your direct time that you spend that you could be spending on someone else that potentially would pay you more. So it's really important to look at it that way. Then another thing that I always look at is what kind of business, what kind of client is this? How much money do they have? And of course, in some instances, that's easier to tell. Like if you're working with Facebook or a big company, you can probably assume they have pretty decent budget, even for writers. But if it's a smaller company or a startup or a company that is maybe just starting out with some copy or content work, it can be a little more tricky to estimate their budget. And I would say don't be afraid to ask those questions. So if you're in a meeting with a potential new client and you feel like you can't really tell, how much budget are they willing to spend on me or on writing in general? Just ask. In most cases, you might not get an answer that actually has some numbers in it, but you get a little bit of an idea of what the ballpark is for the budget. And that can give you a pretty good idea of how much you should charge or if this client is even relevant for you. It has happened to me a couple of times that while asking this question, I realized, damn, like, these people definitely can't pay what I want to be paid. And then it's a good opportunity to be really transparent and to say, hey, sorry, you're probably going to have to find somebody else. I usually refer some people that are a little more junior to them. And that way you can still make sure that you maintain that relationship without underselling yourself, which I think is really important. The more successful you become as a freelancer, as a writer, the more you're going to really have to stand your ground when it comes to your rate. Because fun fact, in the end, every client can always find somebody cheaper. And it's the same for companies that you work for full time. They're always going to find somebody that's going to do it for less. But the question is, do they want somebody that can do it for less? Is the person that does it for less necessarily better? You don't know that. You want to sell them to work with you. So that's something you really have to keep in mind. So what is the relationship between the value you have and the value you can provide to the company? And it's not always just about being the cheapest possible person. Certainly not. Like I can definitely say that now that I have many years of experience, probably every single time I quote a client, they already have quotes from other writers who are substantially cheaper than I, and they will still go with my offer because they trust my expertise. So you really need to stay on top of what is my value and how can I sell that value and how does it compare to the value of potential other writers. And one really nice thing that I've learned throughout the years is that clients and companies, they're not always looking for the cheapest writer. No, they're not. They're sometimes just looking for the most experienced one, and then they're willing to pay for that. I've had many conversations where, for example, when I was going up with my hourly rate and I was testing it for the first couple of times to, try to charge clients a little higher rate, and I was really nervous about it. I was like, okay, so this is on the edge now. They might say, damn, that's too expensive. Nobody even blinked. So I think if you're really tuned into the market and you are really confident in your skills, you can charge more than you think. And I think that's a really good thing to remember. By the way, I think most of the things I talk about today, they apply pretty much to freelancing and working in-house slash on a salary. However, there are of course some minor differences. For example, that oftentimes the budget or the salary range for an in-house position is likely already set. And I can definitely say from negotiating salaried positions over the years and again deciding against those that I definitely feel that salaried writing positions are still behind writing as a freelancer in terms of what they pay. And the reason I say this is that I feel that in-house or companies that are looking for in-house writers, they often have pretty high standards. They want really good specialist writers, but the really good specialist writers actually can make a lot of money freelancing. And this is something I often tell my friends who are in the same business to really take that into consideration. Definitely working in-house has advantages, like nothing against it. I love working in-house if I get paid properly. But if you're looking to make money or you're in a really specialized niched field, then as a freelancer, it's very likely that you can make much more money if that's what you're after. Specifically because I think that a lot of those in-house writing budgets haven't really been adjusted yet. And then there's big difference between the disciplines as well. Of course, you have those when you're freelancing just as much as when you're salaried. For example, people are much more likely to pay you more by the hour as a UX writer rather than maybe an SEO writer. And that's completely normal. And that would be the same for an in-house position. But the range in-house is maybe a little bit larger even. And I can definitely say I've seen a couple of offers for UX writing positions, mainly because two of my very close friends, they were applying for UX writing positions in different cities in Europe. And I was pretty shocked to see how low those offers were, specifically if we're looking at a field like UX writing, where it hasn't been around for a long time. So people with even just a couple of years of experience are considered pretty senior in the field. So I definitely feel like the salaries need to reflect that a little better. However, I've also recently seen a trend where I think since the demand for UX writers has gone up a lot, I've seen companies hire full-time in-house UX writers after those people have literally only done like a one-day course in UX writing, which I find also a little questionable. I mean, I think it's always great to give people a chance to, you know, if they're new in something, if they've just retrained. But for an in-house position, I think it's a little tricky. So I'm very, very happy with the fact that I started off freelancing for many years and I got a lot of experience from different fields and different clients. And I definitely wouldn't be the UX writer I am today without that. And it definitely adds a lot of value to the work I do. And, you know, I think a lot of people have certain, well, prejudices towards freelance writers, and freelance writers maybe have the same with salaried writers or in-house writers. But in the end, I think a mix is always good. And I may go back to freelancing someday. I may go back to working in-house someday. But I think like people who say, oh, I only want to work in-house, freelancing isn't for me, that may be a personal choice. But I would wish that a lot of those people would be more open-minded towards bringing on freelancers for an in-house position, because that was definitely something I struggled with a lot. A lot of the in-house writers, they didn't want a writer with a freelancing background. I don't really know why. Is it because I'm better? Maybe. Who knows? No, I think it's just there's this prejudice, and I recognize this from other freelancers as well. So when like some of my freelance friends, not all of them are freelance writers, they do other stuff as well. When we would meet the same type of people, but they had only worked in-house, there was this a little bit like, you know, like the bad kids versus the cool kids in school. And it felt a bit strange. Like in the end, you know, we're all kind of working on the same stuff. Just maybe the freelancers need to hustle a little bit more. But, you know, like respect each other and tolerate each other and give each other chances. If a freelancer comes to me and says, hey, like, Nicole, I really feel like I want to do something in-house now. Do you have any tips? Of course, I'm going to give them tips. And the other way around as well. If like there's an in-house writer I talk to and they're really unhappy, for example, with their salary, which is often the case, of course, I'm going to help them get started as a freelancer if that's something they want to try out. Like, I definitely think the more you can try out, the better, specifically when it comes to disciplines like writing and a discipline as versatile as writing, where there are so many different titles and niches and things that you can focus on. And I just want to say there is an episode pretty early on in the podcast here where I talk a lot about freelance writing. It's called How to Get into Freelance Writing, where I talk a little bit about my journey and how I got into it, what it means, how it looks like, the different titles and stuff you have there. So definitely recommend that if you're specifically interested in freelancing. But yeah, to get back to the topic, so how much should you charge as a writer? Again, I think when you're talking to a company or a client, you're going to meet two different types. You're going to meet the type that just want a pretty good deal on a writer. They see some kind of value in improving their writing, or maybe someone has told them that they should focus more on their content and their copy. But there's also the other type of client who have experienced firsthand what good writing can really do, because that is a little bit of the problem with writing. In the end, most people can write. A lot of people think they can write well. Fun fact, even though they can't. And only few people so far, at least, have experienced the power of really good writing in a business context. Like people will appreciate some nice prose or great poetry when they're reading like outside of the work context. But in a work context, I think a lot of people just underestimate what good writing can do still. And that's a little bit of an issue when it comes to getting paid the amount of money that you want to get paid, because you really need to look out for where are those people that really see the value in this. And then again, there are certain disciplines where this is easier to do. For example, UX writing. For most people that are even interested in a UX writer, it's very clear how UX writing can impact their product, and they definitely see the value in it. So you're going to meet more people who've actually already experienced that and who you don't have to convince of the value of writing. However, when it, for example, comes to a discipline like content marketing or content writing, it can be a little bit more tricky. So people may have heard like, yeah, content marketing is the shit, you should invest in it, but they're unsure how good content marketing actually looks like. Content marketing takes a lot of time to kind of vamp up and to see results and measure them directly. So you may have to do a little more convincing to show them like, hey, this is the value of some really good writing or really good content. And I think that's just good things to keep in mind. And so when it comes to people asking me how much I charge or how much they should charge or how they should know how much they should charge, like I said, I can't answer that. I don't know how good you are. I don't know who your clients are. I don't know anything about your background. I don't know anything about your experience. I don't know about your style. There's so many things. I can't answer that. But I can be transparent and tell you what I've charged throughout the years. And I don't think you're going to like it. But here we go. I'm just going to tell you because, you know, transparency. And in the end, I'm at a point now where I'm pretty unafraid of what will happen with this. So when I first started out freelance writing, freelance copywriting, I was really young. I was like 14, 15. I did this first before I was even officially allowed to have my own company. And basically just reached out to people to kind of help them. And people reached out to me because I always enjoyed writing. That's kind of something I kind of did most of my life. I didn't even see it as really a source of money for a long time until I became a bit older and I saw, damn, like there's a lot of demand for this. There's people starting to talk about this more and more. But so when I officially was 18 and I could officially charge for my work, I did focus on building a portfolio. I know that there's different people that say portfolios aren't important for writers. I think they are quite important, mainly because it gives me an idea of how thorough someone is, someone's personality, kind of their style, how they structure things. Like, please do not look at my portfolio. I usually link it in the episode description, but it's way too crowded. I have so many projects in there. I really need to clean it up, but I just don't have the time. And right now, people don't really look at my portfolio that much anymore. So it's kind of done his business. I'm probably going to revamp it someday, but not now. And I know that's how a lot of writers feel about their portfolio. But anyway, so in the beginning, I really wanted to create something that would show people, hey, like, this is what I do. This is how I write. This is my style. And it is pretty tricky to find paying clients right away. So I did create some portfolio work. So what I did was I would look up some companies in my area or companies that I was interested in, and I would check maybe their copy on a landing page or their blog, and I would rewrite that. Or if they had a blog, I would write an article for their blog. And then I would email someone and I would send them that and I would say, hey, just so you know, like, I did this, you don't have to pay me for it. It would be great if you would allow me to put it in my portfolio. And if you like, you can use it. And the response was really positive. I would say in half of the cases, I did end up getting paid, or I did end up getting like some gigs from them afterwards. So it's a really good way to get started, to build those relationships, and to also build your portfolio. And you really don't need a lot in there to get started and to be able to start sending that to clients as a good reference. And the reason why I say this is that one of the most asked questions I get is, what platform did you use? So I did not use a freelancing platform. I wasn't on Fiverr. I wasn't on Upwork or Freelancer, or what it's called now. Like, I did all of this on my own, and I highly recommend that you do the same, because while those freelance platforms can work for some people, the payment is just ridiculous. You're just going to get paid way too little. And I think it's much better to build kind of your own momentum organically right away. So you get a better idea of your fees, of your rate without any fees being deducted from that and so forth. So I would definitely recommend that. So when I had my portfolio set up and I had like a couple of gigs coming in from those people that I've reached out to for portfolio projects, I started charging really little. You're not going to like this, but I charged as low as $25 an hour. were around $50 per article. And those were long articles a lot of times. Like, I was doing a lot of long form article writing in the beginning. It was ridiculous. I probably like wrote 4,000 words for $50 and thought that was a good deal. So I did start there as well. However, I quickly was able to go up. Like, my portfolio grew, my client base grew, I got like positive feedback from clients. And so pretty quickly, I was able to increase those rates. And then another thing I really want to mention, it does depend on your market a lot. So once I started working in Sweden, I was, of course, also able to increase my rates just because, you know, there was a little more money in the market for that kind of work. I would say during my first year of full-time freelancing in Sweden, which wasn't so long ago, you'll be shocked to learn that I charged between like 500 and 650 crowns an hour, which responds to about like 60, 70 bucks an hour, which is very, very little. But it worked. And most clients back then weren't really willing to pay me more. I had to make a name for myself in Sweden first. But it was also an okay rate because most of the clients I had back then, there was a large amount of hours. They were long contracts, like 6 months contracts with like 40, 80 hours a month. So it was still decent money. But yeah, definitely I started off quite low. And I want to say this because I have a lot of fresh freelancers reach out to me that want to get started in Sweden, that want to start charging over 1,000 crowns right away. It's probably not going to work that way. If you get really lucky, definitely, you know, try. But even I started quite low. So there you have it now. And yeah, like after my first year and a couple of larger contracts, I definitely increased my rates. I don't have a rule of how often I increase my rates, but I would say that I increase my rate about twice a year. And it's gotten less and less over the last couple of years. So I won't increase by like 200 crowns or like 20 bucks. I'll increase by like 5 to 10 bucks. And that has worked really well for me. And that's also a nice way when you have a lot of recurring clients to work with that, which is what I do. I have a lot of clients that I worked for like a couple of years ago that will suddenly reach out again. Or they'll refer me to somebody, to another company that could be interested. And so when you have recurring clients, you need to find like a nice way to still kind of increase your rate as you get more experienced. And by doing it in like small chunks, honestly, I've never had a client say, oh, but like a year ago, you charged us like 15 bucks less. Like, we want that rate. That has never happened. They were always happy to pay the new rate. So I definitely recommend that you kind of find a way to increase your rate. And you need to actively do it because I know it's a hard thing to do and there's never going to be a right time. Like, increasing your freelance rate is a little bit like having a baby. There's never a good time for it, but you just have to do it. And you'll be happy with the result in most of the cases. So yeah, so let's say 2-3 years into freelancing, I was probably charging around 750 to 850 crowns an hour in Sweden, which is around maybe $90 on the upper end, which is decent, but it's still not awesome. And during that time, I was getting much more momentum. I was having way more client requests and contract requests than I could handle. I was getting full-time offers all the time to work somewhere in-house. I started teaching. I started like giving courses, I started public speaking, I started doing a lot, and I've always done a lot of like of my own content marketing, building my personal brand, giving stuff away for free, like for example, this podcast, and that really started taking off. So I had to increase my rate more and more. And I would say that today I charge around 1,100 crowns to 1,500 crowns an hour, depending on the client. Full transparency, I still have some clients that I charge a little less than that. And that's just because, you know, I've worked with them for a long time, or maybe they haven't sent me any work since that last rate increase. But definitely, if somebody new would reach out to me, I would charge them that. And that has not been a problem when I was still freelancing in the last couple of years to get that kind of rate. And so as you can see that over the course of how much time have I spent freelancing now? Well, I mean, 12 years, but like full-time freelancing, definitely not 12 years. I've gone up from charging $25 to charging around $150. And yeah, so it's been a journey and I've done that in small steps, but there's a lot of things that of course have boosted my rate throughout the years. So, you know, that's what I want to break down for you now. Like, it's great. There's definitely freelancers that can charge $150. There's freelancers that can charge $200, $250. Full disclosure, I've charged that as well for certain projects at certain companies. So you can definitely get there. But honestly, not a lot of you will, because it takes a lot. And it's not just about, you know, increasing your rate over and over again. You also have to increase the value of your work. And that often is a little bit more tricky to do. So how did I do it? And how do I think that you can boost your value or, you know, get a higher fee when you're charging clients? And also, of course, this applies for if you would be negotiating for a salaried in-house position. So I think the number one thing is that you need to make your clients happy, because they will refer you to other clients. And that's a great way to just, you know, get new work without having to do any marketing. But also, if you have direct client referrals, those already think that you're probably a pretty good writer to work with, because you've been referred to them directly. So of course, this means you can, they're probably not going to question your rate as much as somebody that doesn't know anything about you and maybe didn't even take the time to look at your portfolio and some of your other work. So definitely direct client referrals are always great. Then something that really helped me was I got a lot of public speaking experience. I started teaching online courses. I started teaching online sessions, facilitating workshops for some more and more renowned brands and also schools. And that, of course, really helped, because if you have something like that under your belt, especially at a pretty young age, which was also the case for me, definitely clients and companies are going to see that, hey, this is a person that apparently knows their stuff, which, fun fact, people, I do. And speaking of that, it's not just about the public speaking and the potential teaching what you're doing. It's also just about working with known clients. So when I originally started off writing, I worked a lot with startups just because that's what I wanted to do. I was really into the startup scene. I thought that was really exciting. I loved how quickly I could do stuff, how quickly I could learn stuff. But over the years, I don't like working with startups anymore. No, like, I still enjoy working with startups, but, you know, we have a more healthy relationship now. It's a little less abusive. I know what I want and what I need, and I know when I have to hit back. But anyway, over the years, I also started working with bigger companies and, you know, some agencies, some much more well-known companies. And that really helped as well, to show clients like, hey, like, this person knows what they're doing. There's definitely some value here. If company X has worked with them, like, they're definitely good enough for me. So that can, of course, also help you, you know, charge them a little more. Then definitely something that I almost didn't want to mention this, but it is something that really helped me. It's a sheer mass of projects. Like, don't get me wrong, I've worked really hard and a lot for many, many years now. So I've worked with a lot of different clients and a lot of different companies on a lot of different projects. Like I said, do not look at my portfolio, because even though there's like 10% of what I've ever worked on in there, it's still a lot. And that does help, because whoever reaches out to you or whatever gig there is that you're interested in, you've likely worked on something similar. And clients love that when they can see like, oh shit, they've worked with like somebody that maybe even is a competitor, or they've written for somebody in the same industry. That can really help them feel like, okay, like, it's going to be easy to work with this person because they already understand some of our needs. So yeah, definitely. And then last but not least, I know we're all really tired of hearing this, but your personal brand does matter. Yeah, that's just how it is. We live in the time of the internet. A lot of client interactions happen online, especially, of course, now that we're living in a pandemic. But how you present yourself online, what people can find about you, it really impacts the amount of money you can charge and the amount of contracts you can get. And as writers, I always say, I feel like we have a great advantage. Like, we know how to write. We know how to write really well. So why don't we use that to our own benefit? So, you know, if you know me, I write a lot of both work-related stuff and random stuff on Medium, on LinkedIn. I have this podcast. I respond to certain things. I'm not great with social media in general. Like, I'm by no means like somebody that consistently posts on Twitter or Instagram or Facebook or somewhere else. No. But I do put out like articles that really mean something to me for free that can help people in the industry, or maybe are just inspiring, as often as I can, just because I enjoy doing it and it does add to my personal brand. It can give clients an idea of the certain tonality that I have, the kind of person that I am. So I would definitely say that is more important than you think, So clean up your LinkedIn profiles, clean up your websites, clean up whatever there is about you, and we'll probably help you convince clients or companies that you're a good person to work with. And on that note, I want to mention one more really important thing that I feel people don't like to talk about this, because there is no nice way to talk about this, but it does come down to your personality and how you present yourself in meetings. And this goes both for salary negotiation or interviewing for a job, as pitching a client and trying to get a new freelance project. The type of person you are is either going to help you or make it harder for you to get that gig or to get that job. That's just how it is. We don't like talking about it, but some people just have a natural advantage. Some people just have very charismatic personalities. They're much more convincing. They just seem more casual. They're maybe more funny. They maybe just make the other people on the other side feel more comfortable. And that, of course, will make it easier, because as humans, we have a lot of bias and we like to bring on people or to work with people that like make us laugh, or that we feel are similar to us, or that we feel are just very confident in what they do. And I think the confidence part is really important here. And if you're not confident in your work yet, you know, fake it until you make it. In that case, it's actually true. But I want to point this out particularly because I think this still is a big issue in the industry. You know, what I just mentioned, people like to hire or bring on people that are like themselves. So I think it can be really hard to get started as a writer or get like paid what you want as a writer if maybe you come from a different cultural background and you're trying to do it in a country that doesn't have that cultural background. I think that can be really tricky. It was tricky for me as well. Not in the sense that, you know, I am white after all, but I'm not Swedish. And that becomes really apparent when I interview for jobs or I pitch clients in the past. And in the beginning, that was really tough for me. It made me really insecure until I started realizing, wait a second, like, this is actually a benefit. Like, you know, Swedes are pretty great, but they're not that great. They have some things that they could do better. So if I just pinpoint those things and show how I can help with those kind of behaviors, it is my favorite one here is conflict diversion. Swedes hate it. Like, they don't want to get into a fight with you. And I love it, because if there's something that bothers me, I will tell you. And in most cases, this is actually what the team or the project or the company needs. So I've just started selling those sides of me. That worked really well. So you really need to be confident. You need to work on how you present yourself. And if you get better at that and you kind of listen into what your clients need, what your company needs, then you're going to have an easier time negotiating your salary and negotiating your rate and selling yourself to them. But yeah, I mean, I'm not going to lie. I am unfortunately a quite charismatic person. I'm pretty funny, and I can use that well to hide when I'm maybe having a bad day. But the biggest benefit is that I'm really confident in my work. Like, nobody can question my work. I know I have a lot to learn and I learn a lot on my own, but I also know what kind of value I can provide. And that has been really great for me and how I present myself in meetings, both online and in real life when we still had them. So it's definitely something I want to end this episode with, that, you know, don't take it hard if it's more difficult for you to find clients or to get a job because you maybe get insecure in interviews or you don't do so well when you're talking face to face. You can practice that. You can really, you know, take a deep breath and try to focus on the things that you're really confident on. Maybe work a little bit on, you know, just how you present yourself. Talk to some friends, ask them for some tips like, hey, how do you see me? How do you view my personality? See what you can work on. And I think that's actually a really great exercise, not just for writers, but maybe for writers specifically, because I think a lot of writers think they are much better at writing down words than they are at talking and telling stories and just being themselves. But you need to be good at that as well in this world today, where it's all about, you know, people want to work with someone that they can really trust. So yeah, that was it for today's episode. Felt like a lot of rambling from my end. I hope it was really useful to you. I hope it answers all those questions that I get on LinkedIn all the time about how much you should charge or can charge. I hope if this pissed you off, because I was sharing numbers pretty concretely, you know, you can ping me. And I'll do what I can to send you a gift that is appropriate for your response. And yeah, thank you so much for listening. Please tune in for the upcoming episodes. And if there's anything that you think I should talk about more in this podcast, or maybe you want to be a guest on this podcast, you can also message me. And thank you so much. This was Content Rookie. Happy New Year. I'm Nicole. See you soon.